As an architect, I like things being very technical, and I like painting pictures. So this morning, I want to paint a picture for you, tell you a story. Story based in the millennium. The sounds around him brought him slowly out of a deep, refreshing sleep. Psalm 4, verse 8. He lay there listening to the morning chorus, the birds all around him. Whilst that fresh smell of the dew was on the ground, all around. Whilst it was still early morning, it was not cold. It never is anymore. The gentle warmth of the sun was coming up. He lay there content. Content with everything in his life. Psalm 37, 3-4. Trust in the Lord, do good, dwell in the land, and enjoy safe pasture. He had spent the night on the edge of the woods, camping near the river with his best friend, who was still fast asleep, only a few feet away. Opening his eyes slowly, Peter lay there, looking up at the unbroken blue sky, which he could see far above. The only thing visible to him were birds flying in the sky. He closed his eyes again, tried to visualize those grey, oppressive clouds his great-grandfather, or Gramps as he called him, had told him stories about when he had been growing up in the old world, where the skies were oppressive and the air could sometimes burn your skin in the eyes, or where they were so angry that they ripped across the ground, destroying everything in its wake. Opening his eyes again, he looked up and around because he could not imagine such a sky or such devastation. He had seen clouds before, but they were relatively small ones because God now gives us rain in our land in its season. The early rain and the latter rain, as it says in Deuteronomy 11:14. But a world where the skies are grey for days on end, where feet of rain come falling down in a single day, causing flooding and destruction, that was something he could not imagine, let alone where the air would burn your lungs and made it hard for you to breathe. He remembered asking Gramps why the air would sting and burn you. Whilst Gramps had given him an answer about industrialization, chemicals, pollution, corporate greed, he had not understood or comprehended what these were. He remembered asking in reply, "But why would you want to put something in the air which would hurt someone?" Gramps had replied gently, "It was because man obeyed the God of the old world and not Christ, who now reigns supreme in Jerusalem." 2 Corinthians 4:4. Mankind have made the wrong choice back in the Garden of Eden not long after they had been created. And whilst mankind was able to choose how to live, without God's Spirit guiding man and Satan sitting on the throne ruling the earth, then no matter what man did, it always went contrary to how God wanted man to live in peace and receive blessings. Peter took another deep breath of air and another. The smell of the dew on the ground was fading now as the sun rose a bit higher. But the smell of the wild roses hung heavily on the air from the other side of the river, Isaiah 35:1. It was hard to believe that 150 years ago, this whole land had been a wilderness, void of almost all life, barren and parched. The young man opened his eyes again and sat up and noticed his friend was also stirring. For a few minutes, they both sat up there stretching and waking up before walking to the stream. Crisp, clear, gurgling water. Cupping their hands, they both drank deeply from the stream, Isaiah 43:20. And then splashing the water onto their face, they woke up and ruffled their hands and water through their hair. Now something else was on their mind, breakfast. Whilst his friend made a small campfire, he got his small fishing rod out and went to a quiet spot in the river where the water was slower. He baited his rod, dropped in the line, and sat there waiting for a few moments. Again, his mind wandered back to the stories his great-grandfather had told him about the old world. He knew that they had to be true, no matter how hard these stories were to believe, because nobody told lies now, not even small white lies, Leviticus 19:11. His great-grandfather had spoken of the rivers 150 years before, being yellow and brown in colour, and that fishing in the rivers not only cost you money, but in most of the cities, they were dead or dying. and some, even in the most picturesque of landscapes, the rivers had been killed off completely when poisons had leaked out from factories, either into the watercourse or directly into the river. A river being dead. How could a river be dead? But even more incredulous was the idea of the ocean being dead. Hosea 4, verse 3. Gramps had spoken once about one called the Pacific, which died from radioactive waste, from a power station which had leaked into the sea from a place called Fukushima. Such strange-sounding names, Peter thought. Ever since he had been a young boy, Peter had gone fishing with Gramps many times. And no matter where they fished, they had always caught more than enough. So much so that they had always given the extra fish to friends and families or neighbours when they returned from their fishing trip. These once dead waters in the seas and the rivers and lakes had now all been healed by the great river which flowed from under the door of the temple in Jerusalem. Every living thing where this river flows is healed. Ezekiel 47:1-10. Peter had even seen this great river when he and his family had gone up to Jerusalem to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, as in Zechariah 14:16. It was an amazing sight. Flowing from the temple, the shallow river came out, and before long it was a huge river, so deep you could not cross it. And beautiful trees lined the banks either side. Today was no different. He was suddenly brought back to reality by his rod bending and dancing. Slowly and skillfully the young man landed a trout. Beautiful specimen, healthy and beautiful looking. Must have weighed at least 8 pounds or so. Returning to his friend, they prepared the fish and started to cook it over the fire. The smell of the smoke mixed with the fish cooking, and it was so mouth-watering, it was unbelievable. Just as the two friends started to dish up breakfast, they heard the sounds of a man singing not too far away. They looked up and they could make out the form of a large, strong-looking man approaching. The stranger was dressed in bright colours and a pack on his back, walking up the valley towards him. When the stranger was close enough, they could see that he must have been in his 60s. And almost in unison, the two teenage boys called out to ask the stranger if he wanted to join them for breakfast. To which the man smiled, nodded and came over, still singing heartily. Isaiah 35:10. No one is scared of strangers anymore. In fact, no one makes us afraid anymore. Jeremiah 30:10. Breakfast was good, and the boys talked a lot about the fact that they had been camping out. And the man listened quietly to their story. Whilst telling their story, both of the boys kept looking at the big stranger. And even though he looked familiar, they couldn't place him. And they thought they knew everybody from the surrounding villages. It was the man's turn to talk. And he talked about growing up and owning a farm, not far from where they were currently. And he was now returning home back to it. He talked about how almost 40 years ago he had made some bad decisions, sitting around, not working the land, and he had ended up having to sell his home and his land, Leviticus 25:23. People were still struggling then with human nature. Since then, he had been travelling the country working as a servant or a labourer, and wherever he was, he worked for food and lodgings, Leviticus 25:35, or by gleaning from the edge of the fields. 35 years ago, he had met a man further up the country, and he had become his servant. He had seen that this man was a good man and that he was wise, so he worked for him. After the first 6 years, he was free to go, Exodus 21, verse 2. But he saw this man was good and wise, and he became his employee so that he could continue learning under him, learning how to manage the farm, learning how to work hard and to work a business. Peter's mind flipped back to one of Gramps' stories about the different kinds of servants and slaves in the old world. Some people had been stolen, torn from their families, Exodus 21:16, beaten, forced to work for nothing, kept in poverty, and treated worse than animals. Some were slaves by the fact that their employee paid them the bare minimum and paid them weeks or months late, Leviticus 19:13. Some were slaves because their parents or grandparents got into debt and their families became slaves to pay the exorbitant amounts required to repay that debt. Peter remembered asking Gramps why people would treat others like that. And Gramps had simply replied, because Satan was sitting on the throne of this world, deceiving mankind, hating mankind. And mankind loved money and power more than anything. They became lovers of themselves and had no knowledge or respect of God or his laws. 2 Timothy 3, 1-4. The stranger continued that he had been treated like a son by his employer. He had been taught many things over the years about life, business, how to make good decisions based on God's laws and way of life. He had taught him how to work the land properly and to work hard, Ecclesiastes 9:10. And by the end of those years, he had been running the man's business and working the farm for him. He was a far change from the young man he once was when he had left the farm not far from here, struggling with his human nature. He was now ready to move forwards and make a success of his land and his home. Being a servant in God's kingdom is about education, training, developing, an apprenticeship, if you like. And now that the year of release was only a few weeks away, the stranger was returning back to his village to receive his house and land back, Leviticus 25:28. He was going to manage his farm right this time round, to really make a success of it, to work hard in accordance with God's laws. The three of them kept talking as they packed up their camp and they began to walk back to the village. It was not a long walk, but it would take them most of the day. And as they walked, they continually talked about what they saw and just how good and pleasant life was in every aspect. The stories that Gramps had told Peter seemed so strange and almost unreal. But Peter talked of them to the stranger freely. As they walked along the path, the landscape they passed through was so rich and vibrant. The lush vegetation was not dense and overgrown, as the ground was no longer cursed with weeds. Cypress trees and myrtle trees were abundant, Isaiah 55:13. They stood tall whilst they were grouped together to allow views of the scenery around them. They had left the river where they had camped overnight, but dotted around them were pools of water, and in the valley below there was a fountain of water shooting up into the air, feeding the streams snaking through the valley. Providing a backdrop were several woods. In the distance, cedar, acacia, myrtle, oil trees, pine and box trees, the scent of which hung on the air, and mixed with that of the roses all around, it was pleasant and a refreshing smell. Isaiah 41:18 and 19. Down in the valley, groups of men and boys could be seen working together. Children working and learning from their parents, learning a craft, learning to work, learning to live together as a family, happily, and most importantly, learning how to live according to God's laws, Deuteronomy 11:19. Peter always went out to work with his father or his uncles, and it was always fun. And most of the time, one of the sons of God would be there working with them, teaching them also. Each city had a son of God ruling over it. They teach us formally on the Sabbath day, but they teach us informally every day, no matter where we are or what we are doing. Some of the sons of God have authority over the five cities, and others authority over 10, depending on their faithfulness, Luke 19:17-19. The groups working down in the valley were building more homes. They were always spaced out with plenty of land around them, and in the distance they could see houses dotted across the landscape. There were no walls and gates to be seen, Ezekiel 38:11, but rather they were set in beautifully landscaped gardens. These houses have been built and crafted by master craftsmen who have learnt their trade over 100 years or so. In between the houses and around, Peter could see young vineyards and fig trees being planted for future crops and somewhere for the families to sit and rest, Micah 4:4. Peter pictured his own house his father had built with the help of his grandfather and the local community. The materials were of such high quality. The workmanship and detailing was astounding, light and airy, somewhere you could relax in. He often sat with his parents sitting outside on the deck after a day's work, talking about the day and what they had done, and drinking the fruits of their labour at the end of the day, Isaiah 65:21-22. These houses don't rot anymore. Whilst once the creation had been subject to futility, but since the sons of God have been revealed and Christ has returned, the creation has also been delivered from the corruption and decay, Romans 8, 20-21. There is no such thing as dry rot anymore. Things don't corrode and decay. There's no more infestation of termites and damage from them. The hurricanes and tornadoes Gramps had spoken about don't occur, so the buildings won't suffer storm damage, nor will there be wildfires sweeping through swathes of land, destroying everything in its paths. These buildings will last the millennium out without a problem, which is really good because we're not only building houses for ourselves to live in, but even though, as it's still a long way off, we're starting to build homes now for those who will be raised in the white throne judgment, Revelation 20 verse 5. A time when billions of people will be brought back to life, and they will need houses and crops. And so in order to be prepared, we're starting now. Each house for them will be fully furnished out. It will have its own land, its own crops, and there will be tools there to manage the land. And we literally have tens of millions of plowshares and pruning hooks now, so that's not an issue, Isaiah 2:4. Peter's house was more than just a building. It was a home, and it, along with the land around it, belonged to Peter's family forever. And likewise, all of those that they could see dotted around would remain the property of those who dwelt within them forever. Gramps had not been so lucky when he was a young boy. He had grown up with his sister and parents in some place called Las Vegas, in the old world, not long before Christ returned. It was an average house, crammed into one of the suburbs, with a small fenced garden or yard. Their neighbours' houses were literally feet away on either side, and across the street from them was an apartment block, literally house upon house, Isaiah 5:8. All year round you could hear the buzz and the hum of the traffic on the highway, the sound of the aircraft approaching the airport. Neighbours argued, sirens from the police and other emergency services penetrated the night air almost constantly. There was never any peace, Romans 3:17. Gramps' father had worked in the city as a manager of one of the casinos, where man's greed and love of money was totally evident. One horrendous night on his way home, his father had stopped to buy his wife flowers for a present from a gas station. He had been shot and killed by a group of teens in a mugging that went wrong, Romans 3:15. Gramps and his family had been devastated. Since Christ has returned, no one has been murdered. No one has taken the life of another, Exodus 20:13. In fact, even if your thoughts turn to hatred towards your brother, Matthew 5:21-22, and wherever your thoughts went off track to the right or to the left, you hear a voice over your shoulder. This is the way. Walk in it. There are teachers who care now. Teachers who want the best for you. They want you to be blessed. They want to help you. And they are freely available. And they are there when you need them. Isaiah 30:20 and 21. As for peace, well, God has blessed his people with peace. Psalm 29:11. Through this one tragic event, Gramps had not only lost his father, but everything. Everything started falling apart from that moment forwards. His mother had never been able to really recover from the loss of her husband. They had no other family nearby, and no help, and no one to comfort them. There was no help or support from Gramps' family from the system, and within 9 months, their home had been repossessed by the bank. Their family home was lost, gone, taken in their time of need. There was no catch net for them, no support. Gramps and his sister and mother were homeless. And there was nothing. They had nothing at all. It was even illegal for people to give them food now that they were homeless. Peter was horrified when Gramps had said this first. Why would people be stopped from helping those in need? Why would people oppress the orphans, the widows and the homeless? Zechariah 7:10. It was now approaching midday and Peter and his friend and the stranger were hungry. And just up ahead they could see a vineyard with grapes the size of your fists. After a minute or so of walking, they entered the vineyard and picked a couple of grapes each. And they sat and ate them at their pleasure in the shade of the boundary hedge, Deuteronomy 23:24. The stranger spoke of when he had struggled with human nature and made those foolish decisions of not working hard and of being lazy, which had resulted in him losing everything, of how he had never gone hungry, always having eaten well, either by gleaning by hand, verse 25, or what they were doing now, eating fruit when needed, but always within the boundary of the field and never using a sickle. He explained that under God's government, that even the poor would never be hungry, but they had to work for it. There were no free handouts, but also that when people harvested their crops, they left corners unharvested or grapes still on the vine, left specifically for the poor and the stranger, Leviticus 19:3. Continuing, he went on saying that when he was hungry, and due to the time of the year, if there was nothing to glean, then people gave him food. And even though he was a stranger, people took him in and gave him shelter. Matthew 25:35. Over the 35 years he had been a servant, learning about land management from his employer and master, there had been a few others who had been in the same predicament as him. But over time, God's laws were learnt by mankind, and they were lived now by the people. The number of those in need has reduced right down. And the stranger had not actually seen another person having to glean to survive for over a year or so. Mankind was finally learning and reaping the rewards for obeying God. Peter remembered when Gramps was homeless with his mother and his sister. There was no free food. No one gave them shelter either. And they ended up joining a community of 1,000 others who lived in the flood tunnels underneath the glittering city of Las Vegas. Some down there were drug addicts. Some were war veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress. There were hundreds of normal people who had lost their way or who, like their family, had suffered a traumatic event. They even met one or two who had lost everything at the casino where his father had worked. Ironic, really. Gramps had often mentioned a man, Sarge as Gramps called him, who had lost both legs in a futile war or in a land far away. Gramps liked this man, and over a period of time they became the best of friends, almost a father and son bond. The system had turned its back on Sarge too, despite the fact that he had given everything for his country. Over a few months, Gramps and his family managed to scavenge enough to live, an old bed which they all shared as a family taken from the skip outside an apartment block, clothes from the city dump, and a couple of chairs which had been thrown out from somewhere. And they even managed to find some toys that Gramps shared with the other children who lived down there. Gramps hated it down there. Noxious water on the floor, stale air, rats, and the constant threat of a flood surge washing you all away, washing your belongings away, and even potentially taking you along too. And the smell, it permeated everything. Sickening, rotting smell. Everything down there in the flood drains he hated. Once Peter and his friend were full and rested, they continued on their last bit of the journey, still talking about the paradise that they were in, about Christ and his government now reigning supreme, the laws, the statutes and the judgments, talking about them as they walked in the way, Deuteronomy 6:1-8, and just how the world was changing for the better because man was now forced to keep these laws, forced to be happy and to reap the rewards and the blessings for obeying. As they started nearing the village, they could see more people out in the fields working. The weather was perfect for bringing in the bountiful crops. It always is now. And the workers of all ages, fathers teaching their sons in the field, and they were all busy and working hard. Although they were still a little way off, they could hear them rejoicing and singing. The happiness and the joy was clearly evident. Gramp spoke once about the farmers in the old world using huge machines to gather in the crops. Very solitary job, sitting by yourself for hours on end, harvesting fields, acres and acres in size. Excuse me. In those days, man struggled with the harvest because they planted much seed out into the field and gathered little in. Bugs of all kind devoured the fruit of the field, Deuteronomy 28:17, 38-42. Man had relied on his own wisdom, the wisdom from the wrong tree ingrained in humanity for millennia, and the culmination of 6,000 years of farming expertise was to genetically modify the seed and spray it with poison. The basket of their kneading bowl was well and truly cursed, Deuteronomy 28:17. Gramps had gone on to recount the effects of this form of farming. The bee population collapsed. Some even said they were poisoned deliberately so that you had to use genetically modified self-pollinating seed. People became ill from eating the crops. Cancers increased, amongst other illnesses. Gramps had even recalled an article he had read in a magazine. It was written by the President's Cancer Panel, written to the President himself. And it said, the American people, even before they are born, are bombarded continually with myriad combinations of these dangerous exposures. The panel urges you most strongly to use the power of your office to remove the carcinogens and other toxins from our food, water and air that needlessly increase healthcare costs, cripple our nation's productivity and devastate American lives. Nothing was done. There was a Gentile president ruling over an Israelitish nation, Deuteronomy 28:43. Well, he wasn't interested in using the power for his office, and the land and the water became poisoned still further. Insects and wildlife numbers plummeted to extinction levels, and people got sicker. Peter had asked Gramps why people would treat the land and the food and the people like this, when it was within their power to stop the suffering and the stupidity. There was a sad tone in Gramps' voice when he replied, because there was no profit in it for the corporations in stopping people getting sick, nor in farming organically. As it says in Micah 3:9-11, it was because those in power abhorred justice, perverted all equity. Their leaders judged for a bribe, their priests taught for pay, and the prophets divined for money. And yet they said, the Lord is among us. No harm can come to us. In the paradise that Peter lived in, not only is the food full of goodness, the water is pure and clear, tastes like wine, the air is once more pure again. People are no longer sick. Gramps had often spoken about the vast numbers of people who were sick and ill in the old world, the vast sums of money associated with it, huge profits to be made, and there were millions of people who worked within the health industry. Under God's government, no one says, I am sick, because we have a new type of health system. It's called living according to God's laws and statutes, Isaiah 33:24. After the tribulation, Gramps and all the survivors who were descended from Israel were brought to this land where we are now, Ezekiel 36:24. Gramps would never forget one of the most amazing sights he had ever seen. Sarge, his homeless friend from the flood tunnels, receiving his legs back. Once Sarge had got over the shock, you should have seen him. He would run everywhere for weeks on end, jumping over even the smallest thing that was in his path. And the smile on his face was a joy to behold. Isaiah 35:5-6. Walking through the land around us and seeing the paradise, it is clear that a king now reigns in righteousness, and princes are ruling with justice, Isaiah 32:1. For the land which we now possess is not like the land of Egypt that Gramps had lived, where you sowed your seed and watered it as a vegetable garden. But the land we live in now is a land of hills and valleys, which drinks water from the rain of heaven, a land for which our Lord, our God, cares. His eyes are always on it, from the beginning of the year to the very end of the year. We have the rain in its season, the early rain and the latter rain, which means we can gather in our grain. New wine and oil, just as the people we can see in the fields doing below us now. There is grass in the fields and a quality beyond belief for the livestock. And we eat and we are filled, in Deuteronomy 11:10-15. From watching those working in the fields, you can see that everything people do, they do it now properly, no matter what it is. And gathering in the crops at harvest time is no different. People no more shirk their jobs or do them half-heartedly. As it says in Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever you do, do it with all of your might. And at this time, we really don't hold back either. Our village always starts playing a bit of a game, seeing how much of the harvest we can gather in before the ploughman starts overtaking those harvesting. Amos 9:13. To start with, the harvesters would win every year. But a strange thing happened. After the land had its Sabbath rest every 7 years, Leviticus 25:4, the land seemed to step up a notch and produce so much more harvest than before. And the harvesters now haven't won that game for at least 30 years or so. Mankind had used pesticides and GM to try and grow more in the old world, when really all they had to do was farm the land as God told them to. Truly, this is a land of milk and honey, Leviticus 20:24. The mountains do drip with sweet wine, and the hills flow with it, Joel 3:18. And we are only 150 years into the millennium. As Peter and his friends pass by those in the fields, they wave cheerily to those in the fields below. Peter could see animals, fat, healthy animals, in the fields as well, Deuteronomy 28, verse 4. In the fields by the road, he could see cows with their young calves grazing. Mingled with them, he could see a huge bear also grazing. And if you looked hard in the back corner of the field, in the shade of the hedge, Peter could make out the form of a huge male lion sleeping while the lion cubs ran around in the field. Peter could also just make out his youngest sister in the field behind, up in her favourite place, up with the goats and the kids. Yes, she loved those goats and kids, but that was not the reason why she loved it so much. It was because she always adored the leopards that always seemed to share the field with the kids. She loved to stroke and hug them, and they followed her wherever she seemed to go. Isaiah 11, 6 and 7. Gramps had been about 20 years old when he had entered the millennium. He talked rarely of the tribulation, a time so horrendous like had never been seen before, nor ever shall be. Matthew 24:21. But once in the millennium, Christ and his kings and his priests started to teach. Isaiah 2:3. They started to teach us true knowledge, which leads to life, to peace, which previously man had not known. Romans 3:17. Gramps always made sure he told Peter just who had made the millennium a reality, that mankind may see and know and consider and understand that the hand of the Lord had done this and the Holy One of Israel had created it. Isaiah 41:20. God's plan for Israel from the outset was that they were to be his people. He was to be their God and to bless them. Jeremiah 11:4. Israel would then have become the model nation, and other nations around would have seen the blessings and the richness of the nation. And they would also have started to obey in order to receive those blessings. Deuteronomy 28. Right from the outset, God wanted all of his creation to receive those blessings because it is what a father does. He wants his children to be happy, to be blessed, and to obey. Only since the return of Christ has mankind realized that this is the case, that God wants us to be his children. But mankind had rejected everything God stood for when Adam had taken of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and decided to follow Satan's way of life. And it was impossible for Israel to obey God without his spirit and having a heart of stone. God wanted a family. Mankind was to become spirit beings just like him, just like the kings and priests who now serve him in Jerusalem, who rule over our cities and teach us and guide us. Gramps admitted it took him a while to comprehend the reality. But after actually being taught by Moses, Abraham, Noah and Joseph, he finally realized the enormity of the plan of God. The earth is filled now with the knowledge and the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea, Habakkuk 2:14. And we have been taught by Christ and his princes to obey God's commandments, to love the Lord our God, to serve him with all our heart and all our soul, Deuteronomy 11:13. We've been washed clean with water. We have been cleansed from all filthiness, and we no longer worship the idols of old. We have been given a new heart and a new spirit in us. The heart of stone we once had is now a heart of flesh. God has put his spirit within all of us and has caused us to walk in his ways, in his statutes, and to keep his judgment. And now we do them. We dwell in the land God has given us. We are his people. All of mankind, the Gentiles, have been grafted into Israel, and the Lord our Saviour is God. Ezekiel 36:25-28. Peter and his friend and the stranger arrived back at Peter's house about tea time, just as his parents arrived home from working in the field. Long, endless days of working are a thing of the past, as families always spend the evenings together, learning and talking about the day that they've had. When Peter's father saw the stranger, he ran over with a huge smile on his face and gave him a huge hug. Peter knew the stranger looked familiar. Of course, it was a family resemblance. This was Peter's uncle returning home. His father had mentioned him several times over the years, and why Peter hadn't guessed the stranger's identity before was anyone's guess. With the year of release now only weeks away, his uncle was returning home to his farm just up the way. It was the other farm that his father had been working alongside his own for the last 45 years. The family meal that night was full of happiness and joy, even above normal, with Peter telling his uncle about the farm, the crops which grow there now, and how much grain it produces, the different animal herds now farm there. Peter ran off quickly and returned with a bottle of 5-year-old wine. "Uncle, this was the wine from your vineyard." What a great family gathering this was. It was now time for sleep once more. It had been a wonderful day, and tomorrow Peter and his family would show his uncle his farm, just how fertile and productive it is now, how much more valuable it is now as it produces so much more grain than 50 years ago, and it will be given back to his uncle at no cost. Tomorrow would be another good day. Peter lay down in his bed and looked out the window at the clear, bright stars outside. It seemed almost impossible that 150 years ago, man had said, "There is no God," Psalm 14:1. He wondered how it was possible for people to look up at the beauty in the sky and to think that it had not been created. How one could not believe that God had set all the stars in their place was almost impossible to understand, Nehemiah 9:6. But then Satan was no longer around to deceive us. Christ is on his throne and teaching daily, and he wants us to be his children. It is so sad that for 6,000 years, man did not understand the whole plan of God. Peter was looking forward to the next stage of the plan of God, when all those who had lived would once more live again, but this time in a time of paradise. Gramps would see his father again, be able to reunite his father with his mother. Peter was so thankful that he had been born in the millennium and he had been taught these things from birth. Just before falling asleep again, looking up at the night sky, Peter thought about the time after that, the White Throne Judgment time, out into the universe and beyond, representing God and creating for eternity. And the new heavens and the new earth, as Revelation 21:1 says, God's plan for mankind was truly awesome. Once more, a deep, refreshing sleep fell over Peter.